Go Loud.
You feel an affinity with the Tigers?
I believe the phrase is game recognize game. If you're going to do Putin's propaganda work for him, at least have the fucking gumption to draw a wage for it.
Yeah.
Don't do it for free,
paid, yeah.
You moron. Oh, no, not peddling conspiracy theories here at all.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's episode of A Few Scoops. We are a comedy news podcast that intends to give you all the news of the week without sending you away with tears in your eyes. My name is Aoife Muir. I am an author and journalist, and here in some very swish Canterbury rugby gear is my co-host, Colm O'Regan.
Yes, it is charity shop stuff. You can buy great sports stuff in charity shops because they are the sum total of all failed resolutions.
Yeah. This week we have an update about Ukraine, a hostile takeover of Warner Brothers Pictures, a horrific arson attack in County Offaly, and a new Dublin taxi service which aims to make women feel safer. This week we're headed to business news. Look at us, running the gamut of news. So this week it was announced that Netflix are attempting to buy Warner Brothers Discovery for $72 billion, which is around 61.8 billion euro. And this has created a lot of controversy. Everyone has got something to say about it, including Hollywood actors and Donald Trump. It would mean that Netflix would then have over 30% of the market share in the US and later, obviously, the world. It means that Netflix would absorb the streaming platform HBO Max and Warner Brothers, which has made things like Casablanca and Citizen Kane, as well as Barbie, the Harry Potter films, Lord of the Rings, on and on it goes. A few unions, including the Writers Guild of America, have issued statements on Friday urging regulators to stop the deal, claiming it would eliminate jobs, push down wages, and worsen conditions for entertainment workers. Colm, please explain to me why that is.
Well, it's going to even get even more complicated because Paramount Skydance have also launched a hostile bid to buy Warner Brothers. So a hostile takeover is when a company moves to acquire another firm without the consent of the target company's management. So usually by offering to buy its target's shares. So it differs from a friendly takeover, one that is mutually agreed upon by the boards of directors and shareholders at both companies. So whereas the Netflix deal is Warner Brothers agreeing to sell, okay, Paramount is a hostile bid, so they're backed by the billionaire Ellison family. So they were looking at Warner Brothers for months in terms of a possible deal.
And can I just add something I read? I think people would assume that maybe Warner Brothers are in bad shape and that's why they'd be like likely to sell. Warner Brothers have had one of their best years ever. The thing I read in The Guardian was saying like even the companies that are so successful are not safe from these types of beds and...
I think what happens in these situations is, so they're making money, they have lots of debt, and when somebody offers to buy you, your what's known as fiduciary responsibility, which is your responsibility to keep the company on as sound a footing as possible and have as much money as possible, and your responsibility to shareholders means you have to consider the bid. So this might be a case where shareholders will make money off this. So they want this to go through, even if it consumes the company Warner Brothers. Like shareholders don't give a shit about Citizen Kane or Looney Tunes cartoons. You know, they don't care about history.
I was reading something over the weekend about it and they were talking about someone who was involved in this deal was saying that his son had watched Lawrence of Arabia on his phone. And it was like Martin Scorsese is somewhere screaming in the Apollo.
Yeah, famously Martin Scorsese doesn't believe, is it he doesn't believe Marvel movies are like proper
real films.
Real films.
Yeah, and the fear is now that this could actually ruin, although the cinema going experience for a lot of people is first of all out of reach because it is so expensive, especially if you have like two or three kids, like it's so dear now to go to the cinema. Because of COVID, we're so used to watching things at home. And if Netflix takes over this massive movie company, things will just go straight to Netflix and the entire cinema experience will be taken away from people.
And if it doesn't go straight to Netflix, it'll be 2 weeks. It'll be a meaningless thing. And Like, you might say...
And why would you go and spend the 20, 30 euro to go to the cinema when you know it's coming out on Netflix in 3 weeks?
And the problem for that is, if you're not particularly mourning the death of Thor 15 in the cinema, it's the knock-on effect on the independent cinema and the people who make their own movies for fun and build communities around the movie. So it's bad for, you know, young filmmakers, I think, because the knock-on effect of big cinemas closing, small ones closing.
And surely the point of all this capitalism was they were supposed to have, you know, competition, and competition is now decreasing because if Netflix have 30% of the share.
Yeah.
And why is that why Donald Trump is...
It was never about competition. Everything just regresses to a monopoly eventually. That's the natural, unless... As you're saying, that's where governments step in. So that's why antitrust.
So why has Donald Trump now gotten involved? So this is what American President Donald Trump had to say about the merger.
Well, that's got to go through a process and we'll see what happens. It's Netflix is a great company and they've done a phenomenal job. Ted is a fantastic man. I have a lot of respect for him, but it's a lot of market share. So we'll have to see what happens.
A lot of market share. I can't believe me and Donald Trump agree.
Well, okay. I think that if Netflix agrees to make a Donald Trump documentary for a couple of hundred million, he'll be fine with it. Because he extracted money from, was it Paramount?
Paramount.
Already?
Yeah.
To make something in return for him leaving them alone. So Donald Trump doesn't care anything about anything except money, I would say. No, he's making the point about competition and... Just looking at a Time magazine article on this, and they say, while media mergers technically come under the Federal Communications Commission, it's not the case with this deal as Netflix or Warner Brothers doesn't own any broadcast station, which is interesting in itself, and that the law feels old in that sense because it doesn't have like antennae to broadcast things on a satellite or on cable. But the acquisition will still need to be approved by regulators in the US and Europe. There'll be an antitrust review by the Department of Justice. And there is a source in the White House, a senior official in the Trump administration, told CNBC on Friday that it was looking at the deal with heavy skepticism. And that's in quotes. The whole antitrust thing, again, scratching the surface. But if the current administration was around... when all that trust stuff brought in 100 years ago, it probably wouldn't have been brought in. So this all stems from about 110 years ago, the US Supreme Court basically broke up Standard Oil, which was the monopoly on the oil industry. And it broke up into lots of different companies, including ExxonMobil and Chevron and all those. So all those giant companies.
All those companies that have done so much for us over the years.
All those little cottage industries. Those mom and pop stores Chevron and ExxonMobil were part of a much bigger faceless monopoly called Standard Oil.
Haunted by all the seabirds that they murdered over the years.
Yes. So all of that stuff, that's kind of where it comes from. They may or may not use it against Netflix and Warner Brothers or Warner Brothers and Paramount because there's now two huge, nearly $100 billion bids competing.
I just find it so depressing. Like, don't get me wrong, I think Netflix is great and I think they do some great stuff, but if everything is going to be cut from the same cloth, it's going to be so dull.
Yeah. Imagine living in a country with only like one channel for 100 years.
We are going to stay in Dublin for this story, and this was something actually that really caught my eye this week. So, a new taxi app called Ladycab aims to improve safety and confidence for women travelling by taxi in Ireland's capital city. Means that women can request... and the taxi app will be mostly staffed by female taxi drivers. So the service was founded by Dublin taxi driver Emanuela Negura, and she says it'll have enhanced safety features, including real-time GPS tracking, shareable emergency contacts, route monitoring, and in-app emergency alert linked to 24/7 support. So this woman, this taxi driver, Emanuela, she has been a taxi driver in Dublin for 2 years, and she said the idea stemmed from something that happened to her on Dawson Street in the city centre. So she was parked up on the phone to her mammy when a drunk man came to her car and tried to get in. The doors were locked, and because they were locked, he went round the back of the car and began trying to smash the window. When she got out of the taxi, he was very aggressive, calling her names, and said he was sick of taxi drivers not taking him. Maybe he was the problem. And grabbed her by the throat. She said she didn't think he realised that she was a woman, And when he did, that's when he backed off. But she was incredibly shaken by the incident. So this is where the idea came from. And she said that she had spoken to numerous women who said that they feel much safer getting into a taxi driven by another woman. And she said that every time a woman got into your taxi, she said, oh, a woman. Mm. A woman driving a taxi. Great to see. So just for some statistics, a 2025 survey by FreeNow, which is probably the major taxi app in Dublin at the minute, found that nearly a third of drivers feel unsafe while working, and nearly 64% of drivers admitted they have ended shifts early because they were afraid for their safety. According to Lady Cab's own survey, 87% of women said they would feel safer choosing a female driver, while 78% would prefer the option whenever it is possible. So it'll work the same as, like, say, Uber or FreeNow with an app, and all drivers will undergo enhanced guard vetting and specialist safety training, and will have post-ride reporting and route deviation alerts. She said that she wants it to be about transparency. It'll run under a Women for Women initiative, and there'll be 28 licensed female and male drivers operating in Dublin city centre. I think this is a great idea. The issue will be there'll be lots of people who want this and not enough drivers. We in this country have seen numerous cases of women being stalked and attacked and raped by taxi men. And the thing for women is you don't walk home because something might happen to you when you walk home. And then when something does happen to you, people say, well, what the fuck are we doing walking home anyway in the darkness? Then the other side of it is you could be raped by the taxi driver, which people have been raped by taxi drivers. And women feel like a lot of things, like you can't run. And I know even from my own experience, I've never been attacked by a taxi driver. But even still, when I get into a taxi, I sit directly behind the driver because we're told that that's the best place to sit so they can't easily attack you. And you never sit in the front seat. I used to actually, when I was in Derry years ago, when I was younger, I always sat in the front seat. It was sort of seen as rude if you didn't sit in the front seat. No, I never do it. I only sit directly behind them. And although I haven't been attacked by a taxi driver, I, like I would say most women, have had some very disgusting, perverted things said to me. I've been made to feel uncomfortable in taxis. And another instance was I was nearly pulled into a car by a man who was claiming he was a taxi. And he definitely wasn't. I think he thought I was drunker than I was. And I think maybe if I had been drunker or if I had been a younger woman, because he was an older man and he looked like a taxi man.
Yeah, uncle-y.
Yes, but he had no cone on top of the car. Very clear to me he wasn't a taxi. But I took his registration and took it to the PSNI the next day.
And years ago, it used to be this almost indistinguishable little gold plate, certainly down south, the Hackney.
Yeah.
It was just, you'd have to squint to see it.
Yeah.
So you'd be hailing anything.
See, in Derry, we only got the things on top of the cars in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. But when I was growing up, you know, taxis just looked like cars. Yeah. It was only in recent years that they started having like the plates and all that sort of stuff.
It was only from the beads on the seat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the things for comfort.
How many
drivers.
Holy medals they had hanging from the mirror. But I think this is a great idea. I know there'll be loser men who will say this is discriminatory and it's not fair. And I would say speak to the other men who keep attacking a woman on nights out.
Also, some of the things you mentioned that Emanuela Nagura is putting in, like everything which is designed for a group that needs something extra, it's actually a good idea. Anyway, so talk about enhanced kind of guard vetting and location-based stuff.
See, because like when you get an Uber and a FreeNow, that monitors your journey anyway. So these are things that all our taxis already have. I think she's just enhancing it, especially with like enhanced guard vetting, and route deviation was another one. Even for me, if I'm in a taxi and the taxi man takes a route that I'm not aware of, I start panicking, being like, is this it now? Is something going to happen to me? And I'm sure every single woman listening to this agrees with me. Again, as I said, I'm sure there will be very sad and insecure men who have issues with this, but I think it's a great idea. I just fear it won't be that effective just because there isn't enough and women will want to use this. If I could only have women taxi drivers for the rest of my life, I would.
Yeah, it mightn't scale hugely to start with, but the idea is from it.
Yeah.
And things will be learned. I always believe anything that's an initiative, be it a pilot or something at a small local scale, the worst that will come out from it is knowing more things about how to run something like this.
Yeah.
So I wish her the best.
And I would say, like, I'm not saying, I actually had an Uber driver in Lisbon who was a woman, and it was one of the worst taxi journeys of my life. She was angry to the point of insane, but I didn't think she was going to rape me, and that's what the difference is.
Yeah. You can strike that one off the list. Yeah.
So we wish her all the best. If you want to look it up, it's called Lady Cab.
Very good.
I'm sure most people will have heard that Gardaí are investigating the murder of a woman and a four-year-old child in Edenderry in County Offaly over the weekend. Four-year-old Tadhg Farrell and his great-aunt Mary Holt, who was 60, were both killed in an suspected arson attack in a home that they were staying in. Tadhg's grandmother, Pauline Holt, who was Mary's sister, suffered serious injuries in the attack and she's in a critical condition. Gardaí are now saying they believe the house was targeted over drugs debt and an ongoing feud within a prison. The End of Terrace house was attacked at 8 o'clock on Saturday night as the wee boy and his auntie and his granny watched the TV. The lights were on, the Christmas tree was lit. It was very clear there was people in the house when a firebomb was thrown and the house quickly went up in flames. According to the Irish Times, it appears the three people were trapped downstairs as a result of the fire and the house has been attacked on multiple occasions in the past, including a pipe bomb in May last year, and houses were evacuated. And then on other occasions, multiple windows of the house were broken. Gardaí suspect the same criminals were behind these attacks and previous incidents. The only thing I'd like to say about this, because it's an ongoing inquiry, is these are innocent people. The Gardaí say that, you know, these women and obviously the small child had nothing to do with anything criminality. And even if they did, that does not give anyone the excuse to firebomb anyone's house. And I would also say that some of the reporting and some of the commentary that I have seen about this attack in the last couple of days has been bordering on disgusting. And there is a real rank stench of classism in some of the reporting that I have seen. People deserve to live freely and safely in their houses and in their communities, whether their family members are involved in criminality or not. And I think anyone who firebombs a house with a Christmas tree on and children inside deserves never to get out of prison again.
Yeah. It also shows how, like, the use of intimidation around deaths and all that kind of thing, it follows innocent people.
Mm.
Like, this is no longer fights between protagonists in the drugs trade. It is hurting the vulnerable to get at others. And that's something that's happening more and more.
I just wanted to add that Mary Holt, the woman who died, worked in a local nursing home. And Tadhg's mother lives in a housing estate a short distance from the house. She said to be highly distraught and being comforted by family and friends. And that's now multiple lives ruined. And whoever threw that firebomb, their life ruined now as well. We've talked a lot about Ukraine in the last couple of weeks and we thought we should give you an update as President Zelensky met with the leaders of UK, France and Germany in London on Monday amid heavy pressure on Ukraine from Donald Trump's administration to give up territory it currently holds and bring a quick conclusion to the war. So we already told you that there was a laughable peace plan written by a Russian person in Miami that Zelensky rejected. The screws are being tightened around Zelensky because he knows that, you know, war is very long and very expensive and Donald Trump doesn't like it. So what happened this week?
So this week, I've seen people describe it as almost being good for Ukraine because finally we know what Trump and the US is up to, which is doing business with Russia afterwards, regardless of Ukraine's feelings. Also, you will have seen a national security document launched by the Americans, basically saying Europe is a busted flush.
Mm.
It's, you know, the center of wokeness and it's under threat from immigration and from liberals within. Essentially, this is about the new world order, which is America, Russia, China, whatever you want, doing whatever they want. They've always had that to a certain extent, but now the pretense is over. So pressure Ukraine to accept this deal. And the deal, by the way, involves giving up Ukrainian territory that Russia would take years to capture.
Yeah, they don't even have it at the minute. It's not like when they had to give up the north, they were like, well, the Brits are already there. It's like Russia doesn't even have these parts of Ukraine.
Yeah. So it's a bit like Ukraine and Russia are fighting in Ukraine's front lawn.
Mm.
And the deal says, will you not give them the sitting room as well?
Mm.
And it's open plan from the sitting room to the kitchen. So eventually Russia would take the whole of Ukraine. What's happening at the moment is maybe Europe is finally seeing that they can no longer rely on the US as an ally. And there was even talk during the week, I think Macron was saying in their meetings, we're worried here that the US could betray Ukraine, which is a phrase that's really strange to hear, a NATO ally.
So French.
So now Zelensky's touring Europe to shore up support. A couple of things.
He seems to be getting,
and I think Europe are finally getting it, that they can't rely on the US anymore. The question is, what can they do about it? The first step is releasing all those Russian assets to pay. It's not just paying for Ukrainian weapons, it's paying Ukraine's budget, because they are in financial difficulty trying to fight a war, often with one hand tied behind their back.
So this is money that they've basically seized and frozen from Russia, and they want to give that to Kyiv to rebuild and...
Yeah, and just pay the teachers, pay the nurses, you know, and pay the budget over the course of a number of years. And the money is stored in different places. So, for example, the UK has 8 billion. Belgium happens to be the headquarters of institutions where hundreds of billion is stored. The UK would seize the 8 if they knew other people were going to do the same. Belgium is worried that if they allowed the $300 billion to be used, that Russia would come after them legally because it's setting a precedent.
Yes.
Also, there's dark murmurings that Belgium is worried about the Antwerp diamond industry, which is very popular with Russians. That's not peddling conspiracy theories here at all. But anyway, it is. So it's money, it's weapons, it's pressure, and it's ongoing. And at the heart of all of this is Ukrainian people who, apart from fighting a war, are watching these big powers change their mind. And the fact that the US was sort of saying, oh, we'll support them. And Trump changed his mind every week. And at one point, they were going to get these Tomahawk missiles that could be used to actually fight against the Russian missiles that are going into apartment blocks at the moment. Turns out they were never interested in doing that. So it's terrible for Ukrainians.
Yeah, their lives literally hang in the balance.
Of capricious leaders and weak allies. And that's a tough place to be. And the least we can do is at least not go on saying, oh, Zelensky's over here. He's going to get $120 million for a golden toilet, which is the kind of shit you see commented on his visit here. And I'm like, look, if you're going to do Putin's propaganda work for him, at least have the fucking gumption to draw a wage for it.
Yeah.
Don't do it for free, you moron.
Colm, do you want to hit us with your good news today?
Bringing some Cork good news today. FOTA is opening again. FOTA, venue of a million school tours, and it's been closed for the last while.
Explain to our listeners, if they're not aware, because I've never been, what is FOTA Park?
FOTA Wildlife Park is Cork's zoo, but it's not a zoo. It's Cork's Dublin, a zoo, but it's not a zoo in that it never had the unhappy gorillas in cages polar bears pacing up and down.
What kind of animals are we talking?
Mainly ungulates. You've got giraffes and...
Oh, that's a zoo then, no?
Yeah, it's a proper zoo. Oh, no, it's a proper zoo, but it's just a bit more space. They have a bit more land.
It's like a Cork safari.
Yeah, and it's always been the cheetahs. Like the Cork Examiner, or Irish Examiner as it is now, you used to write for
previous employers.
I currently write for National Newspaper, even though the cinema listings are only ones for Cork. But that's because nobody goes to cinema outside of Cork.
Exactly.
So nearly every year there'd be a photo on the paper like baby cheetah born in FOTA, and then it'd be like name the cheetah. And the cheetahs, if you go look at them, they even have a thing, they put meat on a pulley and they go run after it. And I also like the cheetahs because they all look like underage hurlers. Like they're just kind of...
with their little mullets.
Little mullets and kind of slight slouch, you know, lean as a cheetah, really, a whippet. And just that kind of general hanging aroundness. It's very Cork. The cheetahs in Cork are very Corkish.
I'd say they are.
So it has been closed for 10 weeks nearly because of bird flu. Now, bird flu is something, I think we should do a deep dive on flus in general. So we might take in bird flu at the time.
Just to add for the listeners, these are the type of suggestions me and Siobhan have to put up with every week.
These are the type of suggestions that will actually break this podcast, take it to the next level. There is a huge pandemic hunger amongst people for infectious diseases. I mean, you're already living it. You bring a flu in every week. So the avian flu among some of the birds in the park in October. So October 14th, they closed and they have 21 species, 168 birds. They had to euthanize a good chunk of them, actually. Greyleg geese, peafowl, guinea fowl and mandarin ducks. and also separated other birds from the wild bird population.
Enjoy a mandarin duck at, a week, at the weekend.
Yeah, so orange sauce boost. Yeah. Local orange sauce boost economy. But they've been working with the Department of Agriculture, Food and Marine, and they reckon they're in the clear. So they want people to support them, maybe buy a few vouchers. It's 120 grand a week to run it.
Jesus.
Just to keep the birds in bird feed and the giraffes in giraffe plants. Friendly plants. And there's tigers there as well too. Actually, the tigers are cool because they kind of go under a bridge. Like you can look at them from above. Uh-huh. Rather than, I like that. I don't like staring at tigers right through the glass. It feels like you're taunting them.
Do you feel like a beta male? Is it your masculinity?
No, it's an affinity, I think, is what I'm describing.
Oh, you're so animalistic and rugged that you feel an affinity with the tigers.
I believe the phrase is game, recognize game. So I'm glad for FOTA.
Yeah,
FOTA
well done, FOTA
is open again. And I mean, in the context of all animals should be free and all of that. But as wildlife parks go, it's a good egg. And so we're happy for it.
Yeah, very mixed feelings about zoos. My dad was very against them when we were kids. But then as you grow up and you realise that if you want people to donate to conservations, they have to be able to come face to face with the animals and relate to the animals. So I see both sides of it. I'm sure people are going to disagree listening to this, but I don't know. Maybe I don't know enough, but yeah.
Flood our switchboard with your opinions on zoos. I mean, the other argument against zoos is that they kind of make people gravitate towards the cuter, more photogenic animals, and they're the ones that get saved, whereas the ones that might be more vital in an ecology get ignored. Can't think of one that comes to mind now.
Well, they should just be hotter then.
I know. I mean, they should try harder. I keep saying to the tardigrades.
Maybe if they smile more. Yeah. You know what I mean?
To the little tardigrades, water bears in my life, you know. And that's what happened, actually. They got good PR. It's the bee versus wasps thing.
Yeah.
Wasps like, are bees with bad PR.
It's like bats. Whoever is doing bats marketing, terrible.
Yeah.
Bats are actually quite cute.
Well, like, bats are quite cute and they're a sign of a healthy ecology, but they always get blimped for the delay in building. It's always bats.
Yes.
And
also COVID.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't the bats' fault. They didn't go in kind of going, oh, I shouldn't really go to work today in the market. And they're like, oh, I'm so presenteeism, I have to turn up with a sniffle. It wasn't their fault.
Bats are psychologically Irish, going to work when they're sick. And our other good news is some of the hottest people in Ireland are also very talented.
Yes.
That's right. Golden Globes nominees include Paul Mescal, Kildare's own, and Jesse Buckley from The Kingdom of Kerry.
That's right,
both nominated for Golden Globes for their film Hamnet, which is a film based on the novel by Maggie O'Farrell and will be released here in January. Yeah.
Paul Mescal and Jenny Nuckley have been nominated for Hamnet. Sorry, I know it's not Hamlet, but anyway, whenever I see it, even though I've read the book.
Oh, have you read the book? It's good?
It's absolutely heartbreaking, yeah. Oh. And there's a brilliant interview Jesse Buckley did on Stephen Colbert, and she is a brilliant interviewee.
She is. I've seen bits and pieces with her. She actually makes Paul Mescal, who is, stay with me, people, sometimes I find quite dull.
Yeah.
When he's with her, she makes him more interesting as well.
Yeah.
You can tell he wants to impress her.
Yes.
She's very naturally magnetic, whereas he is a man from Kildare. So.
Jesse Buckley has the distinction of being probably the most westerly Irish actress to be claimed as British.
Mm.
Like, you'd kind of forgive somebody within the pale appearing, but she's from, is it Killarney or Tralee? Mm. So that's as Irish as you can get.
Yeah.
Unless she's from Boston.
And
so
it's very strange to listen to. I was listening to an American podcast and they were talking about the Oscars and they were saying the only person that they think of like as an actual movie star who would be a shoo-in for an Oscar nomination was Jesse Buckley. They were talking about the lack of movie stars now because of social media. And Jesse Buckley doesn't have any social media.
Yeah.
And even the way she talks about her art and stuff. And it was so strange because obviously we love people like Paul Mescal and Barry Keoghan and Jesse Buckley, but we don't think other people love them as much.
Yeah.
And it was very heartening to hear an American film podcast talking about Jesse Buckley as like one of the real movie stars.
Yeah, she does have that kind of interviewee. I'm talking through my hoop here, like about 5 minutes of Jesse Buckley lore. But like that Cate Blanchett kind of when she's being interviewed.
Cate Blanchett is an actress.
Yeah.
So there's something very regal about her or something.
An era of Hollywood kind of vibe.
Do you know what I have in common with Kate Blanchett.
Go for it.
She's also shifted a Dairyman.
Is that right?
She was in Notes on a Scandal with Andrew Simpson when he was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
So she has shifted a Dairyman.
I'd probably
shifted a few more than Kate Blanchett has, but it's good. It's good for her to get the experience.
The question is, have you shifted a London Dairyman?
Yes. My ma used to say I had never met a Protestant until I was 16. And then I went out of my way to try and kiss every single Protestant I ever met. So a few of my first boyfriends were Presbyterians.
Very good.
So they were London Dairymen.
Look at you, hands across the divide.
That's all those things were for, just getting the shift from Protestants.
Yeah. Are they different?
They shift the same, but they have questionable views on football and religion.
Okay. Well, I mean, the views on religion, that's ecumenical. Like, that's just creed.
Matter, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's
anyway, congratulations to Paul Mescal and Jesse Buckley. We will obviously be following this. And good luck for the Oscars, because the Golden Globes are usually a tip then. I don't think Paul Mescal's going to be nominated for an Oscar, but I think Jesse Buckley's going to win one.
Yeah.
Would we say Paul Mescal, hottest man in Ireland?
I don't know. He really goes out of his way to... He's one of the... I still have traumatized by his, was it rhinestone suit kind of culty show band era photograph from about 4 years ago. Can we bring that? I'll be Joe Rogan. Can we get that up on screen there?
What is it? Paul Mescal?
Yeah.
Diamond suit?
It's diamond show band era.
He wore it to the fashion awards and it was a gold kind of lamy type brocade jacket with a bolo tie and a yellow shirt. It is quite something. I would say if he wore that in Kildare, there's a chance he'd be beaten up.
Yeah, well, if he wore it in Kildare about 40 years ago, there's a chance he'd be headlining at the local ballroom.
Yeah, it is given show band. Yeah,
Paul Mescal and the Normal People.
Yo, very done. We should write to him and give him that suggestion. I find Paul Mescal very, very attractive. Anyway. Right, we move on.
Yeah.
I felt like I kind of shat on him. I wanted to just add that I thought he was really hot. Yeah.
That you're open to.
Yeah, if he's ever shifting in the vicinity.
Moving on to, we love getting suggestions from listeners on things we know nothing about. Mm-hmm. So that's an infinite possibility of suggestions. And we were asking, in the light of the controversy around renaming Herzog Park, any suggestions for who in a similar category might be renamed too. And somebody on Instagram suggested.
Yeah, we have a suggestion for the park to be named after Estella Frances Solomons. I had never heard of this person and she is absolutely fascinating. So if anyone wants to look her up after this, I would recommend it. But Estella was from a very prominent Dublin Jewish family and studied at the Dublin Metropolitan School of Art and then the Chelsea School of Art. Then she was a member of Common the Man and was active during the revolutionary period. She is noted for her portraits of her contemporaries in the Republican movement, and her studio was used as a safe house during the War of Independence. She married poet Seamus O'Sullivan and helped financially support his Dublin magazine.
I love the idea that so all these Republican volunteers are on the run. So her studio is a safe house. She stored ammunition there. And then she painted portraits. She's like, do you have a minute?
While you're here.
Yeah. Kind of busy, Estrella. You're going nowhere. You might as well sit still.
And madness, her father was an optician whose practice was in 19 Nassau Street. And it's mentioned in Ulysses by James Joyce. Her father was also the vice consul of Austria and Hungary. And they came to Dublin from England in 1824. And they are one of the oldest continuous lines of Jewish families in Ireland. Mad.
Yeah.
So there you are.
If your needs are at the intersection of park renaming, art, War of Independence, Dublin's Jewish history, you can see paintings of hers at the Model Gallery in Sligo and also in the National Gallery of Ireland. So love that because, I didn't know her from Adam.
Yep, me either.
And so thanks to Eamon Brandon O'Cuddihig.
There you are.
Cuddihig, so, I presume.
Cuddihig, yeah. Thank you so much to Eamon. I felt like I learned a lot there.
Yeah, thanks Eamon.
And yeah, we love stuff like this. So if you have any other fun facts or trivia to send on this, please let us know.
Including presumably the location at all times of Paul Mescal based on...
Yeah. Did I ever tell you I got pissed once and DM'd him?
Oh, really? Did you get a message saying the person you're trying to contact doesn't accept this kind of shit?
We followed each other on Twitter,
right.
And I was like, well, I was single at the time, just to point this out. Brian doesn't know this story and I think I'm going to regret telling it. But I was pissed and I was telling one of my friends, I was like, oh, Paul Mescal follows me on Twitter.
Yeah.
And she was like, we were out for a few drinks. It was actually Christmas time. We were out for a few drinks. She was like, DM him. I can still like rhyme off the message that I sent him in my head. And it is one of the most embarrassing things. I said, hi, Paul. Aoife here. Right. No need to say that because your name already comes
Aoife
up.
Aoife here. I'm a 65-year-old woman using the internet for the first time.
My name is Mum. So I was like, hi, Paul. Aoife here. Just checking if you're home for Christmas. Do you want to get a drink? And then I said something like, up Kildare or up the Lilywhites or something like that. And he, it's not that he read it and didn't reply. He just never read it. So okay. I don't feel fully rejected. I feel like Paul met me with that off.
Oh, ships that, well, not so much ships that pass in the night, more like one ship that's like miles out to shore. And then there's somebody in a tiny boat going, hey, big ship, big ship.
Yeah, he's like a cruise liner and I'm like in a dinghy.
Yeah, trying to do Morse code with your phone.
Flashing my tits.
Same deal. Thank you for that. I don't have anything. I mean, now that we're sharing, I'm not going to share anything nice. I'm just going to leave you hang out to dry. Amazing. Yeah.
As always, we enjoy hearing your listener good news, which you can send to a few scoops at goloudnow.com or you can DM me or Colm. This week, one listener says, hi, Aoife and Colm. My listener good news is that my brother has secretly booked flights home from Australia for Christmas. He hasn't been home in years and arrives next week for a month. My parents keep saying how nice it would be if we were all here together. This is the first Christmas for them as grandparents and little do they know. I love an Irish homecoming video.
Yeah.
Oh, the tears. Absolutely love it. Well done. My good news this week, I was nominated for an award
yesterday.
I didn't win, but I did get a free lunch in the Westbury. So that's always decent.
Who was the thieving bastard who robbed you and won?
Fucking Adrian Weckler from the Irish Independent.
Wait, we're setting the wrong tone here.
I was nominated for Business Feature of the Year from the investigative work I did on Tattle with Sinead O'Carroll from the Journal. So it was very nice to be nominated. Got some gorgeous free wine and a 3-course meal in the Westbury. So, you know, pros and cons.
I've gigged in the Westbury. Yeah, it's nice.
It's gorgeous.
It is the most Christmas of Dublin hotels.
Very Christmas.
If you were shooting a heartwarming
or Home Alone
type thing, it would be there. And it's near Brussels. And it's the whole entrance to it is very hotel in a city.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. So yeah, that was my good news. I was very grateful to be nominated. I'm very surprised, actually. Colm, your good news this week?
Books back in the bestsellers. It was the Gallivanting with Words was the 11th best-selling book in Ireland last week.
Woohoo! Well done.
Based in hardback nonfiction. So it's officially not shit and not a failure. That's all is my bar.
That's us for this week's A Few Scoops. We will have our Chaser episode this week about the word of the year. Please get in touch, rate and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.